two very special animal guests for you tonight. Both are hairy and have teeth. Please welcome
Gary Hoffman.
Listen, my teens and my 20-somethings, I get it. It's cool. He's the song of the summer.
Shannon Farron.
Hey, how you doing, darling?
Talk about a ball buster.
Gary and Shannon.
And we gotta do something! And we gotta do it now!
I'm going down, down, down. I wonder who's gonna love me now. I'm going down.
Well, 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 look at that. We now have pictures, photo evidence of Gavin Newsom's fancy schmancy party at the French Laundry. There's a lot of wine on that table, guys. A lot of wine. And you know what? The table, it's inside. That's an indoor table.
If this goes to the whole thing we were talking about the other day about the idiocy around these rules where you can have an outside tent, but it can be a four-walled with a roof enclosed tent. As long as it's outside of the building, it's considered outside, even though it's totally inside. This is also one of those things where when they close that sliding glass door, that is a totally enclosed room.
Yes, sir.
Somebody who was at French Laundry the same night that Gavin Newsom was, not at the same party, apparently, but they also said, which I thought was interesting, the party was getting a little raucous. Some of the other people dining there, not part of the governor's birthday party or the party that the governor was at, were complaining that they were getting too loud, well, which is why they had to close the sliding glass doors.
Did you see the amount of wine on that table?
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah, Jody. This was my favorite sentence that I read this morning. Looks like a home run. The data suggests there is an end date to the pandemic.
Wait, what?
Yes, that was my favorite sentence I read this morning. It was from the Washington Post, a guy by the name of Peter Hoetz.
He's the guy from Baylor.
Yes, yes.
I see him all the time.
And he said, it looks great looking at Pfizer and Moderna. It looks great. It looks like a home run. The data suggests there is an end date to the pandemic.
You know what? The Pfizer numbers actually got better.
Yeah, they went up to 95%.
Which I thought was funny because Moderna's this Monday was 94.5%.
Oh, yeah.
And now Pfizer's like, oh, well, yeah.
We don't
even have to round up.
I love to see the competition.
That's fine. That's a good kind of competition.
Give me all of it.
And then you've still got AstraZeneca. You've still got Johnson & Johnson. You've still got at least, I think it's, is it six other companies that are working on vaccines?
Yeah.
Okay. There is a lot going on in the last few hours, actually, regarding recounts, election status, so on and so forth. First of all, later today, state of Georgia election officials are expected to complete their hand recount by the end of business today. They said as of last night, there were only 300,000 ballots left in the state to be counted. Most of the recounted results in Georgia have been spot on with the original computer tallies. However, they did find somewhere around 5,600 votes over the course of three different counties that were not included in the original tally. Here is a headline you will hear. One of those counties overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump. Do you know how many votes were not counted in that county? 284. Joe Biden leads by, what is it, 13,000 votes, even when you count in these new numbers that come in. And there could be yet another recount in Georgia. Wouldn't be a hand recount, wouldn't be an audit. It would be computer done. The Trump campaign is also asking for a partial recount in two counties in Milwaukee. The state law in Milwaukee does allow them to ask for a recount, but they say you got to write the check, which would be about $8 million to do a full statewide recount. So what they're going to do is they've picked two counties, Milwaukee County, that would cost about $2 million for the recount, and then Dane County would cost about $740,000 for the recount. They'll go after those two very specific counties in an attempt to upend what we saw from November's election.
The president yesterday, as we knew was going to happen, as Chris Krebs knew was going to happen, fired Chris Krebs,
yeah,
the senior department of Homeland Security official for contradicting Trump's own allegations of irregularities with this election. Of course, Chris Krebs came out last week and said that this vote was the most secure in U.S. history and that the fraud baseless, in his words. And he said, you know what, I'm going to get fired for saying this. And that came to fruition.
His timing was wrong, but he was absolutely right about the end result that he did get fired. Trump tweeted last night that the statement that Krebs put out concerning the election was, quote, highly inaccurate. If you remember the statement from CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, and the Election Assistance Commission, the statement said there is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. That goes against what the president's been saying about Dominion software. Dominion is a Canadian company that is, I mean, ubiquitous around different voting jurisdictions around the country. Many, many places use it. Their argument is those places where we've seen irregularities, Dominion software is behind it. The other thing they're not saying is the vast majority of places where Dominion software is being used, there's no allegation of irregularity at all. The Dominion software worked incredibly. And as I've said multiple times, we have to go through a checklist before we get to, before we jump to the conclusion that there was a conspiracy to change all of this. We have to go through first assuming human error. We have to assume accident, or we have to assume incompetence. Those, or even coincidence. Like all, those things need to be looked at because those are much more likely to happen than a vast conspiracy of thousands of voters, elections officials around the country coming up with a plan to fix these things in the exact right ratio at exactly the right time in exactly the right place. And then no one knows about the actual conspiracy to do it.
You haven't spent any time on Parler, have you?
No.
No. And it shows. Pfizer says it's in regular communication with Joe Biden's transition team to keep all interested parties updated on the vaccine, the distribution process. The spokesperson saying there's no room for politics in this process. We'll talk about all the latest vaccine news when we come back.
Ooh, you know who's got it?
Who?
And I don't mean to be sound excited about it, but I'm kind of excited about it. Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, that's great. Because he's obese,
right?
Too.
That's a anyway, we'll talk about that.
I wouldn't be mad if they took him out.
Gary and Shannon will continue.
To die on that hill. I just want my hands off of that. So you have to say it.
Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app on this Wednesday, November 18th. Today, by the way, in other news, is the first day that you can donate online to the KFI Pastathon. Back, it's our 10th year raising funds. And pasta and sauce for Katerina's Club, Chef Bruno's charity that feeds more than 25,000 kids every single week. Because of COVID, obviously, Katerina's Club is helping even more people in the community. They've served already more than 1 million meals this year, a milestone that normally takes the entire year to achieve. So you can go to pastathon.com right now and donate. You could stop at any Smart and Final store, California, Arizona, and Nevada, and donate $10 at checkout, and that $10 donation will provide 14 meals. You can also drop pasta and sauce donations at the Anaheim White House restaurant from now through December 4th daily from 8 in the morning through 3 o'clock in the afternoon, except Thanksgiving. They're going to be closed for that day. You don't even need to leave your car. Volunteers on site will collect your donations for you. Tune in, by the way, December 1st through the 4th. We're going to have some exclusive live streaming events for all the shows here on KFI.
Well, the coronavirus vaccine being developed by Pfizer and the German biotech firm BioNTech is 95% effective at preventing illness. As you mentioned, Moderna said, we've got a vaccine that's 94.5%. And Pfizer says, we see your 94.5 and we raise you 0.5. we got one that is 95% effective at preventing illness. This is according to an analysis performed as the trial of that experimental shot did reach its endpoint. The vaccine study also found a safety milestone with 2 months of follow-up on half of the participants. Pfizer now says it plans to submit an application for emergency authorization within days. That's good That's news, good. Guys.
The numbers, incredibly, 44,000 people. This was a double-blind study that included half of them, roughly half of them getting placebo shots, the other half getting the actual vaccine. They said out of those 44,000 people, they've only accumulated 170 infections in the study. Out of the 170 positive COVID cases, only 8 of them occurred in volunteers who got the actual vaccine rather than the dummy shot, and only 1 of those 8 even developed severe disease. So think of the if it's straight down the middle, 22,000 people got the vaccine. 8 of them eventually contracted COVID, and only 1 of those 22,000 people developed severe disease. That's an incredible number.
It really is. The data has not been peer-reviewed yet. It will be scrutinized by the FDA and that independent advisory committee that makes recommendations to the FDA. That panel of outside experts is likely to meet publicly to consider the Pfizer application during the second week of December. So that looks like what the timetable is.
There is some good news also locally. We'll talk about more about the local stuff next hour, simply because there's a lot to get through when it comes to L.A. County and the new restrictions. But regulators did approve a rapid coronavirus test that can be performed entirely at home and will deliver results in about 30 minutes. It's a test kit from Lucira Health and allows you to swab yourself.
Swab yourself.
I'm just letting that sit for a second. Swab yourself.
Swab yourself.
Oh, but you're collecting a nasal sample. You don't just get to go willy-nilly with that little Q-tip thing. It's nasal sample. And then swirl it in a vial of lab solution that plugs into a portable device. Results are there then displayed as lights labeled either positive or negative. So it's pretty dummy-proof. You will, at this point, need a prescription to get it, but that's that is good news in that we have more tools available to us to figure out who's got it and when.
Treat yourself. Swab yourself.
We will continue to see the numbers go up. We are past 250,000 coronavirus deaths, according to different, I think CNN's counter from Johns Hopkins University is just below 250,000, but NBC says we are above 250,000. And yesterday, by the way, Morgan pointed this out. Yesterday was the first COVID-19 infection anniversary.
Yeah, did you see her Instagram story about it?
Did she write happy birthday?
Yeah. Check it out on Instagram.
It's pretty good.
At Morgan Victory. I did a birthday dance for COVID. Happy birthday, COVID. Yay.
That's a horrible thing to.
It has a birthday song if you want to listen to it on my Instagram.
It's a vibe.
I worked really hard on it.
Morgan.
Yeah?
You need
I was wondering what day this was going to happen when Gary sits down Morgan and has like a
the talk.
A come to Jesus talk.
Is this an intervention? Because I think this is my first one. I've been looking forward to this.
No, I wouldn't say intervention.
This. I don't want to rush.
I know. I wouldn't say intervention, but I do have a couple of what I consider guiding questions. Questions that for you to consider that the answers that you come up with could potentially guide the next few years.
Don't worry. I'm your advocate here.
Yeah. Okay? She is my mentor. That's true. This is not about me, guys. This is about COVID's birthday.
You're right. But it does raise some interesting guiding questions, I think.
What you watch on Wednesday when we come back on the guiding questions as well. Gary and Shannon will continue.
Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. New at 11 o'clock, we're going to be talking about Gavin Newsom's
whoring
time at the French Laundry.
Blatant whoring with lobbyists.
And just, it sounds like blatant lies about what was actually going on.
Yep.
At French Laundry when he went there for a birthday party, and the kind of half-assed apology that he gave the other day about, well, I really should do better. Well, you don't get a lot of chances to do better when you're the governor of the state.
You have to hold yourself to a higher standard when you're the governor of the state. You can't say, oh, we all have moments where we aren't our better angels or whatever the hell you want to say.
Higher angels, I think.
Which makes no sense. Like if you're a higher angel, right, you're better than the lower angel.
Yes.
It doesn't work like that.
Well, you went to Catholic school. I didn't. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. All the angels are equal.
We mentioned,
except for Clarence.
Harvey Weinstein. He was angel second class, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Harvey Weinstein's people have been telling TMZ, it should come as no surprise, Harvey has numerous maladies and conditions, including a heart condition, high blood pressure, spinal stenosis.
We should just put him down.
He's in isolation right now with 101 degree temperature. Doctors believe he has COVID, although we're not quite certain if the New York State Department of Corrections and something, something, NYSDOCCS, has done an actual COVID test or not. But they say they're running on the assumption that Harvey Weinstein has got the COVID, as does, by the way, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. He tested positive yesterday. He also is up there in age. He's 87, but he says he feels fine. He says, I ain't no Harvey Weinstein.
It's time for What You Watching Wednesday.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
What you watching in there?
Americans love television. They wean their kids on it.
USA television much better.
You've been watching too many of those live television shows.
So I felt your daughter's pain last night. I was watching on HBO Murder on Middle Beach. We talked about it before. It's a four-part documentary series. This kid, who's the filmmaker.
This is one where he documents the murder of his own mother?
Yes. His name's Madison Hamburg, and he's like 25 years old. And the first part is the only one that's out. It's going to come out every week. So we have to like wait for it. We can't binge it, which is why I said I felt your kid's pain. Because I felt like we were going back. I couldn't get it all at once.
That's the way TV was meant to be.
I know. But I wanted more. I was super into this. It's addictive. So Murder on Middle Beach is about the murder of Barbara Hamburg, a Barbie she went by. And she was found violently murdered near her home in Madison, Connecticut in March of 2010. Stabbed 13 times, beaten, strangled, all of it. No good. And at the time, she's going through a divorce, a very contentious divorce, because her husband had owed a bunch of alimony, a bunch of back pay to her child support and alimony and the whole bit. And he was withholding it. And they had a court date that day. And she turns up violently murdered. Of course, he has a great alibi because he's sitting in court right next to her lawyer. But that does not remove all suspicion from him. There's this idea that maybe he hired somebody to murder her, something like that. So this kid, Madison, who's only like 25, is interviewing his family members, his grandmother, his aunts, his cousins, his father, who he's terrified of because he thinks his father is responsible maybe for this. And he hasn't really talked to him much since 2010.
Sure.
Madison was only 18 when his mom was murdered, and his sister was even younger. And they were very close because the dad was kind of out of the picture. They were very affluent. Like, they had all of this money, and then the dad lost his job, and that's when the relationship started to go south, and he was traveling a lot and not at home. So they kind of had a fractured relationship with him anyway. But to see this kid interview his grandmother, for example, about her daughter's murder, it is heartbreaking, and it is engrossing, and it's just crazy when they throw in the twist at the end of the first episode that there is another theory. And it's actually the dad who brings up the other theory to Madison. And he says, well, what about your aunts? I know that you're very close with them, but they were involved in this pyramid scheme called the gifting table. And it sounds like one of those pyramid schemes that your high school girlfriends are reaching out to you on Facebook to participate in. And this seemed to have a lot of nefarious branches to it, the gifting table, because there's a lot of money at stake. So they throw that in at the end, and then you're like, tell me about it, because you're already in love with the aunts, because he spent the whole hour talking to the grandmother and the aunts, who are very close with their sister, and you're invested in these people. You, like, feel a part of the family, and then you learn that it could be the aunts that were responsible.
Now, the staging of this, do you actually see the kid while he's interviewing grandma, or does he act as if he's the regular, producer, director of the documentary, so he's off camera?
He's off camera, but it's like their interaction, the way that she responds to him, because it's her grandkid, yeah. You know, it's really even more intimate than any of the other true crime stuff, because it's the family. It's the documentarian is the grandson or the son. And I don't know what I think it's that element that draws you in even more.
And that's HBO.
HBO, yeah.
I saw articles about that, and I have not yet seen, I haven't even seen a trailer.
It dropped
for it or anything.
Just 3 days ago. And I saw the trailer, and I was kind of like, eh. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to give that show a try. And holy hell, like, sucks you in right away.
Just immediately.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of true crime, by the way, I started John Douglas's new book called The Killer's Shadow last night. Douglas, the FBI profiler, one-time KFI host, and we've talked to him before here on the show. We're planning on having him on Friday.
Yeah.
We're talking to him about his new book, and it's all about a white supremacist serial killer that they're investigating. And the opening 4 or 5 pages describing a crime, describing a murder that this guy, you know, executes, is all of it is gripping, and you can't wait to figure out how in the world they're gonna do this.
Is the white supremacy connected to the serial murders, or is he killing people that have nothing to do with his white supremacy?
Good question. I don't know yet. I don't know. I'm only 30 pages into it. But we've talked with John Douglas before because of the TV show Mindhunter on Netflix, which was based on basically him and other people within the FBI coming up with this behavioral sciences unit and figuring out profiling as an actual tool to determine whether or not police are going down the right direction in finding these perpetrators of these crimes. And he refers to it a couple of times in the first few pages of the book when he's describing where he was in the early 80s and when this case originally came to him, because they were still, I guess if you were to put a timeline to it and compare it to what we've seen in the Netflix show Mindhunter, it would be after the first 2 seasons. That's basically where this book picks up. He can correct us on Friday if I'm wrong with that. But so they've developed some amount of the notoriety, and they've clearly made some good successful nabs of bad guys using their profiling. But this is going to be the new big test, and a very high profile test of it, because it's going to be on a national level. This is a story that's got national implications. And finally, the FBI calls him in to get information about coming up with the details of this unknown subject at the point. So,
what is the book called again?
The book is called The Killer's Shadow, and I'm not even sure. I'm assuming it's out already. I know we got an early copy, but I do believe that it's out. And it would be if you're one of those people, loves those true crime things, and you liked his other book, The Killer Across the Table, it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
It came out yesterday.
Oh, good. So it is out.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So we'll talk with John Douglas coming up on Friday during Friday's show. But we got more What You Watch Wednesday when we come back. Nervous, and he's got hormones, and it comes out on his face.
No.
Gets zits and pimples and acne, and it's nasty. And
is it really
can be embarrassing? It can be from stress. Yes.
Why are you yelling at me?
Because you're like, I want to get him some Clearasil. Okay, perfect skin. Sorry, not everybody has a buff puff available.
A buff puff.
What is that thing?
I don't know.
Morgan, is that a thing? A buff puff for skincare?
Thank you for clarifying for skincare. I don't think so at all. I don't know where you heard that.
Okay.
Don't say it again.
Buff puff.
Mm. What do you mean, is that a thing? Of course it's a thing. What do you think what do you think teenage boys have acne? It's because they're under so much stress.
I didn't know that.
From the girls and buff, the stuff and the puff. Pressure.
Preach it.
Buff Puff Body Sponge. There you go.
Right?
Look at you with your Buff Puff knowledge. There it is. Buff Puff Facial Sponge.
I had two sisters. There was always weird stuff in the bathroom that I never quite understood what it was for or what it did.
Nor do we.
Why it was needed. I don't get it. Top of the hour, Gavin Newsom, French Laundry. We now have pictures. Man, if you thought you hated that guy before, ugh, jeez. Just the absolute hypocrisy. Just gross. Just
He's so rich. He wears jeans to a $350 per plate tasting menu dinner. It's like so not a big deal to him.
But
it would be a huge deal in your life if you went to a restaurant.
Yes.
People say this is like on people's bucket list to go to the French Laundry.
Yeah.
You would dress up for that. You would wear a pair of pants. Right?
I would wear a pair
You wouldn't
of pants.
Go in yes. jeans. This is so everyday for him that
but
he's like,
wait,
eh,
but
I'll
wait.
Just wear a pullover and jeans.
What if his jeans ran in the range of about $800 or $900?
I don't care.
Bucks?
It's still denim.
Ooh. Now you're first you don't like
I love jeans, pants. But I'm just saying it's so indicative of how
he never,
out of touch he
yeah,
is.
He did not. Yes, you're out of touch is a great way to talk about it. Steve Gregory also has an update on those lawmakers that went to Maui. Pretty sure Jim Cooper was one of them. I remember we mentioned it yesterday. They hadn't returned the calls, but we'll talk about that.
Really
also,
quickly.
COVID updates for LA County.
Yes. I was just looking up The Killer's Shadow, the book you were just talking about.
Yeah.
And then I Googled the killer, and he looks just like the CEO of Twitter.
Jack Dorsey?
Yeah. Like, it looks like the exact thing that we were looking at yesterday.
A weird thing happened in my house yesterday. First of all, to your point about feeling, you know, companionship with my daughter that you have to wait for TV shows once a week.
Yeah.
Right. The old days. She ran in to the front room where the TV is and immediately turned it on, like fumbled with the remote control to figure out how to record The Bachelorette.
Okay.
Because she said, if I miss it, my roommates will kill me.
Aw. I remember that time when you meet new friends at college and you're living outside your home, so it's a more intimate bonding and it happens a lot quicker because this is like the first time you're away from your family and you want to grab onto something. And you're talking about your lives and your emotions, and it's a strong bond.
Lives and emotions.
Strong bond.
Another TV-related thing is she bragged to me that they got a TV in their room, in their apartment.
Yeah.
And she's the one who attached it to the mount on the wall.
How proud are you?
Right? And this is, I didn't get her any tools or anything. That was the one thing I failed on as a father was like just a simple basic tool set.
You should always have one of those.
She had to borrow a screwdriver from somebody down the hallway. And I said, well, what kind of screwdriver was it? Because that's a dumb dad question to ask.
Did she say Phillips?
No, she just said the one that fit. And I thought to myself, well, I was not looking for that answer, but that answer works, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it doesn't matter.
Toolkit. My aunt got me one when I went away to school. They have like a little toolkits, you know. Mine was even pink handles.
Okay, well, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to, you know, over-genderize.
That was back when pink was okay. You could give something pink to a girl and it wouldn't be offensive.
Speaking of TV shows, we have seen a couple of times now the ad or at least the trailer for the next season of The Crown. And it looks pretty incredible in that they have done a great job getting people to look like people. The guy who plays Prince Charles in this is going to be good. The woman who plays Diana is going to be good. But Gillian Anderson is in this, of course, from X-Files, among other things. Gillian Anderson is in this as Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, she looks impressive. And I watched the trailer yesterday. I still have a question. I was going to text your wife about it. If I can skip. I only watched the first season. I didn't watch season 2 or 3. If I can just jump into it.
Was in the first season, Was Winston Churchill involved in it?
Yes.
And it was what's his face from Third Rock from the Sun, John Lithgow.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I didn't see any of it. It was on in the room and I wasn't paying attention. I feel bad. They say in the first episode of the new series, Lord Lewis Mountbatten, played by Charles Dance, confronts his great nephew, Prince Charles, for being romantically involved with Camilla. If you remember, was married to Andrew Parker Bowles at the time. And in the series, Lord Mountbatten is also shown to write a letter accusing Charles of contemplating ruin and disappointment to himself and his family, orders him instead to marry some sweet and innocent, well-tempered girl with no past. In the show, Prince Charles gets the correspondence after learning that Mountbatten has been assassinated by the IRA. Some critics insist there's no evidence that there ever was such a letter. We, in the United States, we don't care. We don't care how fictionalized you make the royal family. It's such an odd and out of touch thing for us to even think about, a monarchy in charge of your country like that. This bizarre upper class of people that is untouchable. We want the palace intrigue. We want there to be the letter that may not have ever existed. I think that's just kind of a funny thing that people are critical about the crown as being not entirely historically accurate.
Good Lord.
We don't want it to be. We don't want it to be.
Get a hobby if you're complaining about the crown.
Lethal Weapon 5 is being worked on.
Who asked for that?
Well,
me.
No,
oh, really?
You didn't, Rob.
I love that series. Every single one of those are amazing.
I can't watch the first two,
what?
Maybe three, because they overdubbed or looped in, whichever term is correct, Danny Glover's vocals. Like, he would say his lines on set, and then for some reason he either was mush-mouthed or whatever, that they went back and looped over them.
Oh, that would drive me crazy.
It's insanity. I can't watch it.
I feel like you whistleblowed that, because no one would have noticed except you, but now we're going to hear it.
Oh, you're going to see it, and the thing is, you're never going to not see it from now
on.
Well,
now I can hear it just thinking about it. Thanks a lot.
Telling you. Mel Gibson, of course, is on his promotional tour for the movie Fat Man, which I still haven't seen. I can't wait. This is where he plays Santa Claus.
It's like, very dark.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh, yes. The trailer alone is very dark. Anyway, he's been going around, and he was asked about whether or not Richard Donner is indeed working on Lethal Weapon 5, and he says, absolutely. The man who was behind all of that, the man who brought it to the screen and gave it the goodies, is working on it right now, Richard Donner. He's a legend.
If you're like me and you have exhausted every rom-com in the history of rom-coms, you'll be happy to know that there is a new one. It dropped yesterday or the day before. It's called The Broken Hearts Gallery, and it's super cute. I watched it. I loved it. The writing is clever. You obviously know where it's going to go. It's a rom-com, but it's a really cute movie.
Can I point out your personality disorder?
Yes. I know I have one.
Well, this one.
I have a lot of self-awareness about it.
You, on Monday mornings, will come in here and talk about bloodthirsty, madly violent collisions between men in football. And then you'll come in here and you'll be like, oh, it is the cutest rom-com. And it just dropped.
I don't think
it's multifaceted, I'll
say.
You're multifaceted.
Yes.
A
lot of personalities.
Yes. You've got like a bandsaw and a buff puff.
I'm not medicated enough. Gavin Newsom, will unload on him when we come back to Gary and Shannon.
Bomber jacket and a snapback. Your dad's black Honda was on Maybach. Oh, we stacks on the playback. I do it all.
The Justin Herbert memes are all very good, very strong.
Is it just that he cut his hair?
He cut his hair and he shaved. He had some sort of mustache, goatee, facial hair going on.
Oh, yeah.
And he cut everything off, and he looks 14.
He went from 22 years old to 14 years old just by cutting the head hair. That's crazy. What if it works, though? Or what if it doesn't work?
But he's already doing great.
I know, but I mean,
you think it's going to make everybody else not suck?
He was held under 200 yards.
You think his haircut's going to create tackles?
Stranger things have happened, really, but that would be weird. We're following a bunch of election news. We'll talk more about it as we get into Swamp Watch coming up. But it looks like Georgia election officials say they will complete their hand count of election results by the end of business today. They did find, they said, about 5,600 votes that had yet to be added to the statewide tally that will not be enough to overcome, even if all of them were for President Trump, and they're not, it would not be enough to overcome Biden's lead there. Trump campaign is asking for a partial recount in two Wisconsin counties, Milwaukee County and Dane County. That's more than a third of all votes in Wisconsin. And then a meeting of the Michigan Board of State Canvassers has been canceled for today. Instead, they're going to move their meeting to Monday. The Wayne County Board of Canvassers had argued, but finally voted to certify the tally in that county, which included Detroit. But they're demanding an audit of what they say are poll book imbalances. That's where there is a discrepancy between the number of ballots cast and the number of actual ballots counted. So they will go through, it looks like, and at least try to figure that out. But that's what the president was tweeting about today. Something about 71%. In all honesty, I've looked all morning. I can't figure out what he's talking about, where the 71% comes from. So, but anyway, that's what he's talking about.
Well, Gavin Newsom trotted himself out in front of television cameras and told all of us to stay home and to only have one other household over for dinner outside if you could do that, if you could swing it. And we all paid attention and we all refrained from licking doorknobs. At the same time, he hit the town for a fancy dinner on November 6th at the French Laundry, which is probably the fanciest restaurant in the country. Top 10, top 5 for sure. And we found out about it. We found out about it. So he had to come clean this week and say, I'm sorry. I had a moment there where I should have not gone. I should have seen how many people were in at the table and left, but it was outside and it was at 4:30 p.m. That like that changes anything. Like that's a mitigating factor that it was at 4:30 p.m.
Yeah. Oh, and it was among rich friends, so it's not as if anybody was going to be threatened by it all.
It was in Napa, which was in the orange status, relatively loose compared to some other counties. It was to be an outdoor restaurant.
Now, Governor, you say outdoor.
Well, if you listen carefully, he says it was to be an outdoor restaurant. He didn't say, you know, I ate outside, because now we have pictures that show that this party for 12 is inside. And there's a lot of wine flowing, especially for 4:30 in the afternoon.
What they say on their website, apparently French Laundry, at least it's a restaurant website that uses them as one of the potential restaurants you can go to. It shows a picture of the room that they were in. And imagine a room with one wall taken away. And that one wall looks out over the yard, whatever is there. That wall is a sliding glass door.
And that sliding glass door is closed.
Right. Do you know why? Because they started getting loud. Last night, Bill Malugin over at Fox 11 talked to a woman who was at French Laundry that same night. Not in the party, but at French Laundry that same night.
I just happened to look over and realize, hey, is that Gavin Newsom? Who is that? And I
Who
did ask
that?
One of the waitresses, and she confirmed it was.
Okay.
Because at the French Laundry, if you have a question, they're going to answer it when you pay $350 for that tasting menu. And that's without adding on the cost of alcohol. Now, here's the thing. He also said it was for a good friend, a 50th birthday celebration for a good friend who's been my friend for 20 years. You know who that friend is? He's a lobbyist. He's one of the most powerful lobbyists when it comes to the Democratic Party in the state of California. He's been an operative for a long time. They call him a California Democratic politics fixer. He has had a hand in winning campaigns, including Gavin Newsom, and influencing policy. So not only was Gavin breaking the rules to share a meal with a family member or a close friend, like maybe some of us have done, he broke the rules to whore himself further.
Long time.
Which I don't think we have done.
He was the chief speechwriter for Gray Davis. He served for years as a senior strategist for Senate Democrats. He has counseled Gavin Newsom for a very long time politically. Continues to advise Newsom on politics, even though he is the owner of this new lobbying firm, which works on bills which could land on Gavin Newsom's desk. And Gavin Newsom believes, or is under the influence of money to the point where he doesn't think that's not okay. There's no point where he says to himself, number one, hey, thanks for the invite. I'm not going to be able to show up to your birthday party, but I'm going to send you a couple bottles of
Plump Jack wine.
Something that's expensive.
From my winery. One of the biggest clients for this lobbying firm has been Marathon Petroleum. Gave in recent years Jason Kinney's firm, the lobbyist's firm, more than $500,000 worth of business. Marathon Petroleum, a member of the powerful oil industry organization that battled proposals to ban hydraulic fracturing. Newsom, earlier this year, called on lawmakers to send him a fracking ban.
Ah!
This is whoring at its most blatant. You cannot break the COVID rules to go whore yourself around. That's a textbook rule. And take that one to the bank. And he does.
And.
What?
He was wearing blue jeans.
And he was wearing blue jeans because it was like, oh, we're just going to the French Laundry. All right, I'll be ready in five. All right, coming up next, more hypocritical lawmakers in Sacramento drinking Mai Tais in grass skirts with their leis in Maui.
And their coconut bras.
Doing some whoring there. Whoring all over the place.
We got some.
Yes, we do. We're playing that when we come back because it's applicable to the news.
Well, you don't have to be angry about it. Are you just...
I'm angry with these people.
Arguing now.
Like, they think that we're not going to find out, or they just don't care.
When the boss tells us to stop playing it, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary and Shannon will continue.
Gary Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. There's been a lot that's been making headlines the last couple days about troop withdrawals from Iraq and Afghanistan. Also, Israel bombed a couple of Iranian sites in Syria. Brian Suits is going to come along in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll talk about that. He'll straighten some of that out for us. Also, we're going to untangle a story. Dolly Parton.
How did she get involved with the vaccine?
How did she get involved with the vaccine?
Here's part of the reason.
Tell me more.
She grew up a poor girl in the mountains, and so did a Lebanese-born doctor at Vandy.
How did they meet? Oh, there's more.
There's so much more.
We'll do that in the 1 o'clock hour.
It'll get all untangled.
Steve Gregory has joined us because...
I
don't know why.
We love Steve Gregory.
Yeah, what's up?
Wrong left turn.
Hey, what's up?
And then complained about our environment.
Well, here's the thing.
Why is it so dark in here?
I don't remember saying it like that. Well, it sounds like you're wearing a dress.
Steve, we don't arrange our lighting for you. Okay, I know other places in the building might do that for you because of who you are, but we're not them.
Because I can't read?
We're not them.
I can't see the damn words.
Wow. Oh, for the love of God. So anyway, you know where I would like to go?
Where would you like to go?
Hell, I'd like to go to Detroit. I'd like to go to Cleveland. I'd like to go anywhere that is not in California, but I don't. You know why? Because I'm a considerate person, and I don't want to spread the COVID around. Unlike the people in Sacramento. They're not in Detroit. They're not in Cleveland.
No, they're not even in Sacramento.
They're in freaking Maui.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Can you feel the breeze?
Oh, my gosh. Just rushed over me like a...
Yeah, you look great in that skirt.
What?
That grass skirt.
Well, thank you. I got a line of applause for the skirt. What?
Can you taste the Mai Tai at Duke's on the beach there?
Rum tastes differently.
I love rum.
Closer to the tropics.
You can't have rum in Sacramento.
I like the sand between my toes.
Your toes look nice.
Yeah. I'm glad you finally got those bunions taken care of.
Yeah.
Who says bunions?
Who says bunions? I say bunions.
You sound 70 years old.
I don't say bunions, though, like she would.
All right, so what's the latest?
Okay.
What's going on?
So it looks like we have some names have emerged in this little junket.
I'm listening.
This junket along the way
it's the Fairmont Kealani.
The Kealani in Wailea. I'm sorry, I've listened to this in the background. I hope it's not bad words.
No, it's not. But, it's like Don Ho or something.
We will say this. Many of the people who were invited declined to go because they, like Shannon, felt a duty.
I was talking to a California Republican Senator, Melissa Melendez, yesterday. She's pretty fired up about it. In fact, she says that her and her colleagues are going to look into this and find out that this, you know, it's a bad optics and bad timing. Ultimately, the lawmakers didn't break any rules or laws. But they're questioning their judgment. It looks like Jordan Cunningham, Republican out of Templeton, Blanca Rubio, a Democrat out of Baldwin Park, bought tickets according to their campaign expenditure forms back in October. But it's not confirmed that they're there. So those two names have surfaced.
Right, because everybody buys tickets to go to Hawaii.
Right.
Just, so, you know.
The only individual who has confirmed that they are there is Chad Mays from Yucca Valley. He's an independent.
Okay.
And both his press person and he confirmed, yeah, we're here. But they wouldn't go beyond, why are you there and what do you hope to learn and do you think this is bad timing? They wouldn't answer any other questions. They would only confirm that, yeah, they're there. Now, Wendy Carrillo, a Democrat out of Boyle Heights, she tweeted that she was there. But her office wouldn't confirm that she's there.
Well, the tweet displayed the location tag of Kihei, Hawaii.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. You know you can alter those.
Yes, you can change those, of course. But
I wouldn't want to change mine to be someplace where I shouldn't be.
Right.
Or might get in trouble for being.
Right.
So at least that's come up. Now, I know there are people out there trying to get pictures. I found out yesterday there's at least one news outlet that's out there and they are snapping pictures. Cause the problem is that, you know, I was telling you yesterday on the air, I wanted to go out there and do it. Problem is, I don't know what they look like. I'd have to take a tip sheet with me like they do on the red carpet, have pictures of everyone go, oh, and play the little guessing game. But, someone's out there taking pictures. And I think what's going to happen is, and I think we mentioned this yesterday, I think the 4-day conference on how to recover from COVID for each of your states is going to turn into how to do damage control when you've traveled someplace
you
shouldn't.
When you break the COVID rules that have been...
When you break COVID rules in especially California where the governor is doing his thing.
Well, and this isn't just California lawmakers, is it?
No. It's
Oregon,
around the country.
And Washington.
Yeah.
And,
right. And so in the organization, the Independent Voter Project based in San Diego, the nonprofit, and they've been doing this for years, and it happens in Hawaii every year. It's an annual event. And the same sort of, I guess, protocols are in place. Everyone goes because they know that, you know, it's a chance to get away and do this junket thing. And they all know that it looks bad because that's why no one ever admits to it. And it's the best kept
so
secret.
Great.
I mean, Sacramento's horrible at keeping secrets, but apparently this is one they keep.
Well, and if you're from Elk Grove or Yucca Valley or wherever you're from in the state of California, there are ridiculously beautiful places where you could do this same event and stay within the state of California.
Or to Senator Melendez's point, why is it's not a Zoom call?
Right.
Because, I mean, everyone else is doing, you know, iHeartMedia is doing their concerts for thousands and thousands of people on Zoom. Why can't lawmakers 100? Apparently it's no more than 100, which is a fraction of what it usually is. I guess it's usually 300 or 400 people.
And if you're the Independent Voter Project, for your annual conference, why don't you just send people boxes of, I don't know, pre-made cocktails and then have them ready to go?
Yeah, like the
for
virtual
your Zoom
wine
meeting.
Tastings.
Yes.
Well, and more to the point, the group's based in San Diego. Why not just go to San Diego?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no pretty places in San Diego.
There's no Gary in a grass skirt in San Diego.
That's not a selling point.
Oh, but I suspect that if they come back and they don't file their paperwork for 30 days, which is what they have to do, then 30 days, you know, from now, presumably we'll get to know. Someone's going to have to go through and dig through all that, which I'm sure someone from Sacramento Bee or LA Times will, because they have the resources and time. They'll sit there and they'll comb through all of these expenditure reports, and we'll probably learn later on.
Yeah, unfortunately, it would be right around the time, you know, Christmas time, and there's a dead space of news in there people aren't paying attention to. So
could be, and I guess it depends on – I suspect now, because of what's been going on with Governor Newsom and people I talk to in the field, I think people are a little more – disenfranchised and a little more upset with politicians now than ever.
Think so?
Yeah.
When we come back, new county COVID rules announced yesterday.
Yeah, what does it all mean?
Fresh off the press.
This purple tear. I'm kind of relaxed from the music. Are you guys relaxed?
Isn't it great?
Good. Just keep it that way while I give you the bad news.
Great. Excellent. Steve Gregory with the bad news coming up on the Gary and Shannon Show. Shannon, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. A bunch of news when it comes to COVID. New York City public schools are going to close tomorrow. The positivity rate in New York is at 3%, which was apparently a threshold that Bill de Blasio came up with. It doesn't make a lot of sense because that's really low considering New York was ground zero back in March and April. So, but he announced today on Twitter that New York City public schools will close tomorrow as a result of the surge in the numbers that we've seen.
Steve Gregory, give us the bad news when it comes to L.A. County and the talk of a curfew and the talk about this dangerous point.
Coming Friday, curfew goes into effect 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And it also is
that because the beast comes at night?
It's because people drink more after 10 p.m. and they lose their inhibitions and they start licking people's doorknobs.
You know, it's interesting to me how
at least that was their reasoning.
Yeah. How it's all boiled down to that. It's all boiled down to drunk people. I mean, this whole entire thing is because of drunk people. If you think about it,
it really is.
Think about it. I mean, and they're so worried about it, but they will allow, you know, alcoholic beverages to be served at restaurants. They're okay with that. So I order some mozzarella sticks and then five pitchers of beer. Okay.
That sounds good.
Yeah. How come you didn't invite us?
I'm a lonely drunk.
Got it.
I haven't had a mozzarella stick in a while.
We had the mozzarella balls.
Yeah, those were good. But those are different than sticks.
Okay. So then the curfew is 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. on Friday. And then also the other restrictions are going to be indoor non-essential, in quotes, businesses such as retail stores, offices, personal care services, limited to 25% capacity. Outdoor service at restaurants, wineries, breweries will be limited to 50% of the maximum outdoor capacity.
How do they determine maximum outdoor capacity? I mean, we've gone through indoor. I understand there's an allotted square footage and you could figure out basically how many people are going to be allowed in there. But outdoor, because we've seen expansion into parking lots and sidewalks and streets in some cases, how do they come up with that number?
That's based on what the fire department will tell you. The fire department does it based on safety. They do it based on ingress, egress, exit, all of that. So it's based on what the occupancy is set by the fire department, typically the county fire department and the city fire department, as part of your business licensing. Customers of personal care businesses must make advance appointments now, and no services will be allowed to be open that require customers to remove their face masks. So, no more beard trim for me. Then businesses must be closed at between the hours, as I already mentioned, 10 p.m., 6 a.m. Outdoor gatherings must be limited to no more than 15 people from a maximum of three households.
How do they come up with this? Do they just throw a dart at the dartboard?
The science, Shannon.
The science, wow.
Science, Shannon.
I don't see any math, though, when you say the science. Like, you're not backing it up with any, you know, science.
They're just saying it with a capital S, but right. It doesn't mean
anything.
Every
time I ask, that's what they tell me. Every time I say, okay, can you give me a little more empirical data on that? It's the science, Steve.
Steve.
Steve, next call. And then what was interesting is, though, if you remember, coming up to Thanksgiving holiday, the county had come out and said that they were issuing guidance that you could not have any more than 3 families at your gathering, but they never put a number to the total people. So if you have – now work with me here. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the issue where they were having in the mostly Hispanic neighborhoods where they said that the largest outbreaks were happening because of so many people living in the homes in these families – so if you've got a household, like if it's just you and your wife or your significant other, and you're there, it's just the 2 or 3 of you, and you get together with 2 other families, and you got maybe have 6 or 8. But if you've got 8 or 9 people living in the house, and then you got 3 households, you got 27, 30 people.
Yeah.
And so now the update to that is you can't have any more than 15 people from a total of 3 households. So now they put a number to it. So those are the biggest changes for restrictions in LA County that go into effect this Friday.
One of the statistics that I've seen, and it's been surprising, we saw this early on in Florida, and it was taken as good news, that the age group that was being infected most quickly in Florida back in, say, April and May, were people between the ages of 18 and 29 years old.
Right.
We were seeing younger people testing positive for this thing, even though the vast majority of them either had no symptoms or very minor symptoms.
Same thing here.
Same thing here. We're seeing the number, I mean, the bar graph that the county puts out every day of how many people within that age group are getting it is 70% or something like that of all the positive cases.
The cases have almost tripled, Gary, from almost 2 months ago. The cases of people in that age range has almost tripled. And then again, if you do the math and go backwards, what events have taken place recently where that age category was the most active at?
Right. You got protests, you got championship parades, you got Halloween. Those are all going to lead to this thing. But if we were to design, if we were to engineer a way for this thing to spread through the community, because you're not going to stop it, you're just going to try to slow it.
Right.
That's the group that I want to get this. I don't want anybody to get it, but that's the group I feel most comfortable with it spreading the quickest.
Right, as long as you isolate them all.
True, as long as they take some responsibility. Now, that's the issue. How are you going to tell a 19-year-old to take responsibility for the fact that you may have been exposed, you need to keep yourself careful and stay away from grandma?
Which is what led me to the question I asked yesterday that I played on the show when I asked Ferrer. Is your messaging that you're spending $3 million on
right. –
to target that age category, they paid for social media influencers.
Yeah.
And so
that age group, you can't tell that age group anything.
So, right. So why are we spending the money? Why are taxpayers spending the dollars?
It doesn't take a researcher for the knowledge to know that that age group is not going to listen to anybody. Then, certainly not Barbara Ferrer.
No. And then when you take that and you add to it, the Kardashians who are celebrating birthday
right.
parties
right.
on islands
and
without
Instagram.
Masks. And Instagram, there's more irresponsible behavior on social media than can ever be outpaced by the LA County Health Department's rather pedestrian-looking social media campaign.
But man, right. somebody made a pantload of money.
Well, yeah,
laughed about it.
I know. 2 PR agencies are sitting there going, what's our next outbreak?
I can't wait till we go to Hawaii.
I can't wait till malaria comes to LA County. You know, whatever the case is.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Wait. When would we go back to a stay-at-home order?
I'm telling you, Thanksgiving. If then you take Thanksgiving into Christmas, and by the end of the year, if this caseload continues to rise, the key indicators are hospitalizations and deaths. If those numbers start to keep going up, you're going to see a stricter stay at home. You're going to see us go back to April of this year. And the mayor even alluded to that the other night.
Yeah. And we guarantee that we will lose 60% of all businesses.
Right. And I don't think, though, it's going to be as bad through Thanksgiving because that's not it's a gathering holiday, but it's not a like major, it's not like a Labor Day on the beach kind of holiday. So I think it's going to be more isolated. And here's the thing. you know, what would be a great business if you guys want to do a side hustle is get yourself some of those contactless thermometers and have these families hire you to come at the door. And then as aunt uncles are coming, it's like, oh, hold on.
You could be a thermometer concierge.
Thermometer concierge or a valet.
Morgan, you could do that. Earn some extra money.
A thermometer valet.
I was just thinking, yeah, I need
you
to
could
get
dress this up. Is, this dress is up you. Like a turkey.
Well, valet. A turkey and a crop top.
Yeah, thank
well,
you.
Well, duh. What else would a turkey wear?
Well, okay, then. That we'll see, but then temperatures could rise. And that could impact and affect. So Jacob and I go to the Japanese pub the other night. On Ventura Boulevard, and they had an automatic, this automatic thing with a camera on it. And you had to look into it with a little oval face, and it was detecting whether you had a mask on, what your temperature was.
Holy hell.
Jacob, what was your temperature?
104, so I should have been in the hospital that night.
And it says, no mask. And what Jacob and I both had masks on. So that's the kind of reliable equipment.
So you took another temperature, and it came back.
Well, it didn't read Steve's face.
It didn't even
write. It didn't have a mask.
It just said no person.
What constitutes a Japanese pub?
It's a really cool little place. Mm-hmm. What's it called? Imakaya? Zizakaya?
I couldn't remember the name of it.
Izakaya, Izumakaya or something like that on Ventura. And we had sushi and drank Asahi beer. Mm-hmm. It was great. Outdoors, adhering to all protocols, of course.
Right.
I carry my mask with me everywhere.
I'm surprised you weren't beaten up when your temperature read 104.
Yeah.
Or you get your ass kicked or something like that.
Izakaya M.
Yeah, Izakaya M on Ventura. So it was good food, but it was hilarious. We were standing there and just kept going over and over. No mask, no mask, no mask.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. And it was starting to really – it was
– Wait, what did it say? What was it?
Gary and Shannon will be back after this. Here's Rob Newton with the news.
We're going to do Morgan's intervention when we come back.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I've decided.
Yes. All right. Oh,
wait, my mind, let go. Gary and Shannon.
Oh, man, as Carla in the newsroom just said, it just keeps getting better. Turns out at that dinner at the French Laundry, seated at the table there with Gavin and the lobbyist, the powerful Democratic fixer in Sacramento, were a couple California Medical Association people. Shouldn't they know that the COVID kills? California Medical Association at that dinner for 12, where the wine was flowing and the whoring was on full tilt.
They had an entire appetizer full of doorknobs.
Oh, just all licking them.
Take one, lick it, and pass it around. Elizabeth wrote in and said, hey, I grew up in a fairly middle-class family. If we got dressed up to go to a nice restaurant for dinner, my father would often wear his jeans with a button-down shirt and sports coat. It wasn't big because it wasn't a big deal. It was just how he dressed.
But Elizabeth, were those restaurants $350 right. per yeah. person places?
No.
And it's Northern California. It's a Northern California thing that you dress for dinner.
Gavin Newsom's not wearing off-the-rack Levi's, despite his...
That, too.
And I'm not saying that because I look at and I go, ooh, those fit nice. I just, he's not that guy. Morgan?
Yeah?
Oh, boy.
I don't wear jeans very often.
No, I'm not. We're not talking about jeans. I know you don't wear jeans very often. I don't think I've ever seen you wear jeans. I saw you wear one blue dress in here one time with glasses, and that was a Halloween costume.
And it was a great one because you know what I was for Halloween that year? I was
appropriate?
Dressed appropriately for work.
So your Instagram account at Morgan Victory.
This is where the jump off point is.
I'm ready.
What is your overriding philosophy when it comes to your Instagram account?
My philosophy?
Yeah, when people look at that, you say, I want you to come away from Morgan Victory on Instagram with this in your heart or your head.
A lot of questions. I want you guys to have a lot of questions.
Is that because you are desperate for interaction?
Oh.
Ooh, you pulled the desperate word out real quick, Gary.
No, I just mean there's not
he
been a lot of...
He wants to know why you're so thirsty.
Because it's just who I am. Mm-hmm. And I... my Instagram on a deeper level. I want to encourage everyone to just be who they are, full force.
Unapologetically.
Unapologetically. No filter, mm-hmm. no pants.
It doesn't matter if you're not like everybody else. You do you, and you do it 110%.
Exactly.
I think we branded that pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Live, laugh, love, baby.
How did you grow up in Texas? Move to Alabama?
Arkansas.
Arkansas. Please. They're connected. Mm. And aren't they?
No.
Yeah. Aren't they?
No.
And then come to California, but have this. Do you feel like early in your life you were repressed to a degree and now you got to let it all hang out?
It's sad because I wasn't at all. I had great parents that, you know.
Have?
They
Are they around?
They're around, but they, you know, they sent me out here and they're like, we don't know you anymore.
Okay,
you
wait. Know? They're around, but you used the past tense.
Okay, so the point is they did a great job raising me, but at some point the kid just, you know, you can't change.
You can only do so much.
Exactly. Shannon knows that.
Yeah.
Shannon's parents know
they
that.
They do know that.
Yeah. At some point you just have to give up.
Thank you,
know,
you, Rob.
You do what you can to raise them right, and then when they become people like us, you got to just...
Yeah, I think I hit about... I think I hit like 3-4 years old when my parents were just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a lost cause, isn't it?
Yep. Mm.
Do you have younger siblings then?
I do.
Okay, so they tried again.
Yeah, they tried one more time, and it didn't work that time, so they're like, we're done.
So is dad fixed?
They're both fixed. They said, we're not... No chances.
It's probably safer that way.
Yeah.
After I'll say this. Your dad loves you.
Thank you, Gary.
Even if whatever philosophy you have on Morgan Victory on Instagram.
Oh, real quick, Gary also has extra rooms in his house.
Thank goodness. That's what I was about to ask because, you know, I use the parents in a past tense. I am looking to be adopted, Gary, and I've asked before, but I'll ask again.
Adopted by me?
Yes.
No.
Your kids are out of the house.
Your
now.
Daughter's back.
They're
from
adults.
College.
You need to take another shot at this.
I feel like me and your daughter would get along really well.
She's accepting.
You'll never speak to her.
Good for her.
Oh, good times.
There's a lot of honesty today.
There is. I feel like I was just scratching some of the surface here, peeling back the layers of the onion.
Wait. So what was this intervention for again?
I don't remember at all. I don't remember why.
Oh, just me.
Yeah, just general questions.
Okay.
General questions. Do you own a full shirt?
No, I don't. And you know what? This is where it gets sad. But for $1 a day, you could support a child in need like me. I wish you guys could see me now. It is radio, but I only have half a shirt on, and it's not by choice.
And $1 a day.
$1. That's cheap.
You're a bad person.
That's cheap.
She brought her stinky vegetables back.
Yeah, she buys expired vegetables. And then, nice enough, she offers them to people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason why you're getting them for 99 cents, an entire tray of vegetables.
Listen, the vegetables were $3.99.
Those are expensive vegetables.
Thank you. They were organic.
You got ripped off.
We'll talk trending when we come back. Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. The great news today, the vaccine being developed by Pfizer is 95% effective at preventing illness. So we've got Pfizer's at 95%. We've got Moderna at 94.5%. And it says here from Peter Hotz, the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor, it looks like a home run to him. And that the Pfizer and Moderna data suggests that there is an end date to the pandemic.
Pfizer says they should have 50 million doses before the end of this year, that they will start distributing it within 24 hours of final approval, which could come within a few days. That's good news. Hey, coming up, this is our season where we talk about Pastathon. This year is going to be very different, but we are still raising money and we will still be doing Pastathon. Today, as a matter of fact, is the first time that you can donate online at pastathon.com to help pump some very important needed money into Katerina's Club, Chef Bruno's charity that feeds more than 25,000 kids every week. And obviously this year, the need is going to be greater. So you can do it online, pastathon.com. You can also stop into any Smart and Final store at California, Arizona, Nevada. Donate $10 at checkout, and your donation will be, provide 14 meals. Bob actually emailed us this morning and said, I just left a Smart and Final in Rancho Cucamonga. $10 extra feeds those 14 kids. The clerk was ecstatic. You will be able to drop off pasta and sauce donations at the Anaheim White House restaurant now through the 4th of December, every single day, the morning of 3 o'clock at night. It's 3 in the afternoon, I should say. We won't be doing it on Thanksgiving, but you don't even have to leave your car. There are volunteers on there, masked, gloved. They'll collect your donations so you don't even have to get out. But
what?
We are doing our special streaming events the week after Thanksgiving, the 1st through the 4th. Well, each of our shows will be streaming portions so that you can see the magic as it happens in here.
What else is going on?
Time for What's Happening.
What's happening?
All New York City public schools will close in-person instruction beginning tomorrow due to the increasing COVID.
Oh, so they must have science that says it was the schools that were... Wait, they don't have science that says it was the schools they were contributing to the increase.
Buildings are closed for in-person learning until further notice. So you will transition to remote learning every day.
Mm-hmm. The FAA has cleared the 737 MAX to fly again. I expect that as people get back to traveling, do you remember what that is? When you get into a little cigar-shaped tube and you go someplace and the doors open and you're in a different place? Once we get back to that in any sense of normalcy, people aren't going to care about the 737 MAX
anymore. Here's the thing. We had the conversation before the COVID happened when we were talking about the 737 MAX. And, you know, you asked me, would I get on one? And I said, not knowingly. I'll get on one of those this afternoon if it means I can go somewhere.
Our understanding is that if you do book a flight and the 737 MAX is the plane that is scheduled for that flight,
they'll let you know.
Yeah, they'll let you know so that you can change it if you're uncomfortable.
People's Sexiest Man Alive 2020 is not you.
Rod Newton!
No.
Don't say it like that.
I disagree.
Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, okay.
The actor. He was great in Fruitvale Station most recently, but he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Creed. He was in Black Panther. He's an outstanding actor, and he's good to look at. Can you say that?
I can't, because it's sexist.
It's sexist?
Or is it?
No. I think you'd be quite woke if you said that.
I can. That's actually true.
Okay. Rob Newton's got your six.
Thanks, Rob.
Taco Bell's putting out scholarships.
Oh, the Live Mas scholarship. More than $7.5 million in scholarships available for 16 to 26-year-old students. Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm.
You guys? Yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
I want to Live Mas.
Well, okay. It says that it's geared towards students who are community-focused, driven by purpose, and maybe even a little rebellious sometimes.
That is so me. I'm in the streets. I love the community.
You're in the streets.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You literally work for a corporation in Burbank.
She spends time on the streets.
Oh.
Yeah, doing work for the community.
Oh, what you mean by in the streets? You're getting your hands dirty.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
per se.
It's not volunteer work.
Is it like street performing or?
Rob, excuse me.
I'm wondering.
That's for $1 a day. No. No, it's just, you know, community work. It's a nonprofit organization.
She thinks of community work as content on Instagram. That's what she thinks community work is.
Hmm. Have I not changed lives?
Walmart is in the news. Walmart has announced a Thanksgiving dinner for everyone.
Really? Mm-hmm. Do you have to go to Walmart to get it?
Here's how it works. This sounds like a scam to me. I don't know if I want to get into this. It involves downloading some sort of app.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Ibotta is the app that you have to download. But the following items could be redeemed as 100% cash back offer. Bertabal turkey breast roast. McCormick gravy, Great Value stuffing, Idaho and mashed potatoes, condensed cream and mushroom soup, Great Value cranberry sauce. I am listening. Great Value green beans, French's crispy fried onions, and a 2-liter bottle of Coke. Do you have Coke on Thanksgiving?
No. But a lot of people do.
Traditional Coca-Cola on Thanksgiving.
You eat an entire can of cranberry sauce, so you don't get to judge others' predilections.
There's probably more sugar in my cranberry sauce, though, than there is in that 2-liter
right.
bottle of Coke.
Exactly.
I'm not sure I'm going to do that this year. Started thinking about that. Not sure that as I age, that my body can handle that much high fructose corn syrup in one sitting. I mean, I could.
You could do a half a can.
Half a can would probably be. I think that's what I'm going to shoot for.
Yeah. Let's not go totally cold turkey on this thing.
Get it. Thanksgiving. The Pope getting a little.
The Pope can appreciate beauty.
That's not what happened. I think the Pope has some shaky fingers when it comes to the Instagrams.
I don't think so. I think he meant it.
Gary and Shannon will continue to explain that thing when we come back.
Carmen wrote to us on Facebook. Been listening this morning. Love, love, love you guys. BTW, love you back. Felt compelled to comment on the Morgan intervention because I went to her Instagram to see what this was all about. Morgan, you're awesome. Don't change.
Aww.
She says Gary's just jealous that he can't pull off a crop top like you can.
That's the thing, Gary. You can wear a dress, but can you wear a crop top?
I actually have a picture of him in a crop top on my computer somewhere.
That's the weirdest thing anyone's ever said. Go on.
Let's see here.
If she really believed in Morgan, she'd send a dollar.
That's true.
Thank you. And my Venmo is at Morgan Victory.
Oh, my God.
You're okay.
Oh, here it is. You see this, Morgan? It's Gary in a crop top.
Wouldn't you think I'm a girl? A girl
who
has everything.
I've seen this online, actually.
Yeah, you can even see the nipples.
The nipples.
Wow, I really need to step my crop top game up after seeing that.
No, you don't.
You see what a bad influence you are on her?
No.
You know, I'm doing real God's work over here.
Bottom of the hour. Yes.
And you're saying it's okay to expose nipples.
We'll get into Swamp Watch. Wait, I'm saying it's okay?
Speaking of, Pope Francis.
I'm not the one who showed you that picture. You just showed it to Morgan. I didn't say, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you take that picture of me?
That wasn't a private picture. You were in front of hundreds of people.
It was a different time.
Pope Francis apparently liked a racy photo of a bikini model.
Uh-oh.
Who was dressed in stockings and suspenders, standing in a school locker in a white crop top and a skirt barely reaching her behind.
Crop top.
I would wager to say that this is Morgan's dream come true. Like, this is what she aspires to, is having the Pope like one of her crop top pics.
I would die so happy if the Pope liked my picture.
Are you a big Catholic?
No.
Natalia is the model's name. She's 27. And she joked with Barstool Sports, my mom may hate my ass pics, but the Pope be double tapping.
Shout out.
BRB, on my way to the Vatican.
Ah ha ha.
At least I'm going to heaven, she said.
Ah ha ha. Now,
one of the model's followers said, God created that ass.
Yes.
Just appreciating the Lord's work as he should.
That's an interesting way to put it. So the like that came from Pope Francis's Instagram account is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of different media outlets have said, it's not clear if Pope Francis controls his own account. You think?
It's pretty clear that he doesn't.
News of the apparent scrolling sparked a slew of devilish reactions and jokes. My man's just admiring God's creation.
That is a sizable behind.
Leave him alone. Is it real?
I don't know. Do you want to see it?
Oh, I, it's not, it's hard to miss. I mean, this, she's got.
Yeah, yeah. We got to click on it.
No, no, it's up here. Or it was.
Did you get the full thing, though?
Well, if you go there, there's all the other ones, too. Yeah, she's.
What are you looking at over there?
I told you, if you look at the other ones, they're all there. These are all her Instagram pictures.
You know what? If you're going to look at that stuff, it's fine. Do it on your own time.
You just showed Morgan a picture of my nearly naked body.
It's just like in 2020. I don't know if you should be doing that at work. It feels Tubin-esque.
I'm actually in an email with HR right now about to report
all
this.
Can you CC me on that?
Yeah. I just feel really uncomfortable.
I do too. I do too, Morgan.
Speaking of, I might be able to afford a full shirt by the end of the week because I am getting, you know, some sponsorships. So
God, help us all.
You guys are going to love to see me in a full-length shirt, I think.
For Halloween, Morgan wore a blazer one year, like a couple of years ago, when she walked in here in a full suit.
And you didn't recognize her.
I did not know who that was.
You're like, oh, nice to meet you. Are you the new salesperson?
Are you sales? All right. We'll do Swamp Watch when we come back.
I hope so.
Talk about where the election stands and the latest firing from the White House.
That was a good one.
Kamala's getting the briefings, but Biden isn't.
Also, Brian Suits is going to join us. There's been some activity back in Iran. Syria, some Iranian property in Syria. And some rumblings that President Trump is going to try to do a little something-something before he leaves office. All that's coming up. Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. LA Rams practice canceled today. Everything's going to be virtual. At least one player has tested positive.
Oh, I just
COVID.
Got an alert on my phone that all the teams are going into that intensive protocol thing where they have to have yesterday's negative test before they're allowed in the facility. They have to wear the mask the whole time. Really? It looks like they're stepping up across the league, all of the protocols, because there have been a number of teams that have had positive tests this week.
An Israeli military spokesman said in a Twitter post today that Israeli Defense Force targeted military sites related to Iran's Quds Force and the Syrian army. The Syrian state news agency reported that three military personnel were killed. One was injured in quote, Israeli aggression over Damascus. Brian Suits is going to join us in a few minutes. We'll talk about that and the troop withdrawals that were announced this week.
Kamala Harris is back on Capitol Hill. That is where we kick off Swamp Watch.
Drain the swamp. We're going to drain the swamp of Washington. We're going to have fun doing it. We're all doing it together.
Swamp Watch.
Yes, the senator, vice president-elect, went back to Capitol Hill for the first time. She was received by many of her members of the Senate, fellow members of the Senate, very warmly. But she's also got something that that president-elect Biden doesn't have, access to these intelligence briefings.
Inez de la Cotera joins us now from Washington with all of the latest. Inez, what do you know?
Hey, guys. Yeah, so Kamala Harris did receive a warm welcome. We saw her get a few fist bumps from a number of her fellow senators, including Lindsey Graham, which was interesting in that Lindsey Graham, you know, has publicly called into question the results of the election. They've been kind of lukewarm in terms of accepting Joe Biden as the president-elect. So to see him then fist bump Kamala Harris, you know, had some watching and saying it seems like he was congratulating her. His office kind of walked that back. But it was certainly an interesting moment. And then you're right. She did get a classified intelligence briefing in her capacity as senator, which is also interesting because since the GSA, the General Services Administration, has declined to recognize her and Joe Biden as the vice president-elect and president-elect, Biden and Harris have not been able to get classified intelligence briefings. But Harris is a senator, and so in her capacity as senator, she did receive some classified
classified intelligence briefing.
The fact that Lindsey Graham had to explain a fist bump just shows how ridiculous we are as a country right now. I mean, I know that he has repeated claims of voter fraud and all of that, but that doesn't mean that they can't have a friendship or get along. I mean, that's where we're at if he's getting heat for that. I mean, extending any sort of goodwill in the small way of a fist bump. Crazy.
Yeah, so he's the reason he's getting heat is because he's been so lukewarm in terms of, you know, congratulating Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and because he's called into question some election results in certain states, and you know, has been kind of one of those voices who's insinuated that there was voter fraud without evidence. So, you know, that's what made this so it seemed like he was congratulating her while at the same time calling into question the results of the election. He insists, though, he was just saying hello.
When you look at the way this is going in terms of the transition, it's been slow. It's been a little bit haphazard, shall we say, simply because of the lack of cooperation from what we assume to be the outgoing administration. Joe Biden has also been getting some briefings intelligence-wise, but not from current members of the intelligence community. Can you explain who he's been talking to and what they have to say?
Yeah, so because the GSA is refusing to recognize him and Harris as the winning ticket, and because he can't have access to these classified intelligence briefings, he is kind of, you know, he's having to resort to his own methods to get to work. So he's receiving briefings that he has kind of put together himself through the help of former experts, whether it's, you know, foreign policy experts, national security experts. They are the ones who are briefing him, you know, as to what kind of work he's going to have to take care of once he is sworn in January. So that just goes to show, you know, he's insisted throughout this whole chaos, really, that he's moving full steam ahead with his transition, that he, you know, even if the GSA is slow in recognizing him as the president-elect, that he's still going to get to work, that there's too many kind of crises going on that he needs to get a head start on. But that just goes to show the lengths he has to take to get to work is to get former officials to brief him when he really should be getting these classified intelligence briefings.
Have we heard anything from the president recently? I haven't gone on Twitter to find out any of his latest statements about any sort of concession or the legal fight or anything.
Still no concession from President Trump. So that's, you know, I think frustrating for many to see that here we are now 2 weeks after the election and President Trump still refuses to concede. The most he said was that he did recognize in a tweet that he won, referring to Joe Biden, but then, you know, in that same breath on Twitter, going on to say that he only won because the election was rigged. So he's continuing to kind of, you know, call into question the election results, and he's refusing to concede and to cooperate with Joe Biden and get the transition going.
Inez, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Inez de la Cotera there from Washington, D.C. In Georgia, elections officials are expected to complete their hand recount of election results by the end of business today. The state's voting systems implementation manager said that they only had about 300,000 ballots as of this morning that they needed to recount, and that most of the recounted results in those counties in Georgia have been spot on with the original tallies. There were three counties, they said, where they found votes that were not included in the original tally. Those three counties add up to about 5,600 votes that had not been counted, had not yet been included in the tally, but they will be. When you add those in, Trump does cut into Biden's lead to the tune of about 800 votes. So instead of about a 14,000 vote lead, Biden would have about a 13,000 vote lead in Georgia before that's officially certified. But there could be yet another recount. They could do the computer recount if they need to.
Every tweet in the past 7 hours that the president has put out comes with the disclaimer from Twitter. This claim about election fraud is disputed. Every single one.
One of them was about Michigan, right? He said something about that there were too many votes for the number of people who supposedly cast ballots, and you can't fix that. And then he said, I win Michigan!
He also retweeted a tweet of his own from 2012, where he talks about voting machines switching Romney votes to Obama.
Right. So a couple of things about that. Somebody sent a couple of videos to me regarding a woman who claims to have evidence of Dominion Voting Systems, this Canadian company that produced a bunch of the software for voting systems around the country, many, many different places. And that the evidence will come out, she says, that Dominion makes it a product designed to change votes from one candidate to the next, that it was a problem 4 years ago, that it was a problem 2 weeks ago, et cetera. Which, listen, if that's the case, needs to be investigated. But you can't just claim to have evidence and that makes it evidence. That's the same problem we've seen with reports in the Washington Post and New York Times about what goes on in the White House. You can't just claim to know what goes on in there and actually have it be true. You have to be able to back it up with something. Just saying you know a guy who knows a guy who wrote the Dominion software is not enough. There must be evidence of this happening. That's all.
All right. More Swamp Watch when we come back. Also, we'll get an update on the vaccine race between Pfizer and Moderna and the others coming up after Rob's news at the top.
Gary and Shannon will continue.
I just want to be part of your son.
Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Latest update on the coronavirus vaccines coming up at 1 o'clock. Talk more about the just absolutely fantastic news that has come out of that field. Yesterday, the acting Secretary of Defense announced a troop withdrawal that would leave about 2,500 troops each in Iraq and Afghanistan. Christopher Miller with that announcement yesterday. And that January 15th, we believe, is the date that was set, which obviously makes it coincide at least a little bit with the January 20th inauguration for, you know, whoever takes the oath of office that day. Fresh off his lunch at the French Laundry is Brian Suits, host of Dark Secret Place,
Suits,
right here on KFI.
How much wine did you put down?
2 year waiting list. 2 year, a bunch of plump jack. Yum.
Mm.
It tastes like dictatorship.
Oh, that sounds sour. A little sour in the face. So what's going on with this? The troop withdrawal announcement itself was not necessarily a surprise, was it?
You know, to be honest, if I were Trump, I would have announced this during, like, you know, the election back in June, maybe, and say, look, Democrats get us in these wars or whatever. I'm getting them out. This almost smacks like being petulant. I mean, this kind of sounds like leaving a bunch of stuff in the refrigerator when you get evicted and then unplugging the refrigerator so that whoever moves in deals with a gigantic crap show in the refrigerator, if I can Encarlo this. And so the deal is the real deal is that NATO is feeling like they've been dropped off at a picnic and then we ghosted them, because you don't just up and go. And you know, if Trump needed cover for this, he could say, hey, all you GOP senators and all you Democrats, you guys had 19 years to deal with this. I'm going to deal with it because with Biden in, there's going to be eight more years or eight more weeks, whatever, of the Obama policy and the Bush policy. For him to do it now and say, hey, pack your stuff, we're leaving. So the French and the Dutch and the Italians and the UK are saying, but you guys gave us the ride here. I mean, we literally fly them in. We said, please play in our NATO Afghanistan party. Don't worry. We'll cover the gas. You know, you just come along. And they're saying, no, a power vacuum is what led to this. When the Soviets left in 89, they left behind a vacuum. The Taliban filled it. Al-Qaeda came in. That's what led to that. So now you're going to make up for a wrong with another wrong. So it doesn't look like there was a plan. The Pentagon certainly doesn't think there was a plan.
So what does this mean for people in Afghanistan and Iraq? What does the vacating of the post to this degree mean for them?
In Afghanistan, it's a Taliban win. And I don't know if you've ever been a 12-year-old girl, Shannon, but if you're one in Afghanistan, pretty much you better start burying your books. And just like we do guns here in California, bury your books and get ready for the Taliban to come down from the hills and be the government again. In Iraq, the problem there is that, you know, Obama left a vacuum. Iran filled that vacuum. And now if we leave again, Iran's going to refill that vacuum. So it's just a pair of vacuums. It's a tiger shark and a Dyson.
Did the president have to fire Mark Esper to make this happen?
Well, it's funny because up until the point of June, Mark Esper was called Mark Yesper because Trump never said anything he didn't agree with. And then suddenly Esper in June said, traditionally we don't use the regular federal military against American civilians unless it's the draft riots of 1864 in New York or whatever. This is really a National Guard job. And Trump doesn't want to be bothered with the nuances between regular military forces and the National Guard. And so he said, you know, prepare your resignation letter to spend more time with your family and et cetera, et cetera. So, but there has been a clearing of the house in the Pentagon because Esper probably would not have agreed with what may be coming, which is the United States turning a blind eye to Israel and the Gulf Arab states whacking Iran.
Is that imminent? I mean, are we talking weeks?
Nuclear whacking, I should say.
Wait.
Well, between now and January 20th, the Magic 8-Ball says chances are good that Israel and the Gulf Arab states, who already have seen the Biden-Obama Act, for 8 years nothing was done but a phony nuclear deal, and they're saying, you know what, now's the time. We can't wait till there's a Biden presidency because he'll stiff arm us. Trump won't care. The circumstantial evidence is piling up that a long planned strike against the Iranian nuclear program is impending. And as of last night, there's even more indications.
Yeah, because Israel, we understand, took out some of the Iran Quds Force encampments, I guess, in Syria.
Yeah, and what's funny is this has become a regular thing. Remember that Looney Tunes cartoon where the wolf and the sheepdog would show up and clock in?
Yep, and then go after each other, yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. Netanyahu literally calls Moscow and he says, the Israeli Air Force is coming. As usual, you're not the target. But if your people are near this and this and this and this, you might want to go away. And there's a running joke in Syria. When the Russians peel out in their jeeps, follow them. Because minutes later, Israeli missiles are hitting. And so Putin's his part of the deal is, I'll stand down my air defense, which is world class, and it's in Syria, and I won't give Assad a heads up, and I certainly won't give the Iranians a heads up, because it doesn't break Putin's heart to see Iranians die in Syria. He wants them out now. Assad wants them out. They just don't know how to tell, you know, the crazy guest that they have to pack up and leave. The Israelis are like, oh, you know, well, don't worry, we'll do it. But yeah, they give Putin prior warning, but they don't give the Syrians prior warning. And the Syrians get to display their air defense incompetence, as they do, on a nearly monthly basis now.
Shannon was critical of the governor for wearing jeans to French Laundry. How much do you think that pair of jeans cost him?
Those are $280 jeans.
Well, I'd be dazzled. I'd double that.
Yeah, because you either, if you're the governor of California, you do one of two things. You wear flat out 501s,
right,
invented in Sacramento by Levi Strauss, made of surplus denim tents. You either go full California that way, and then you rock an awesome sweater, a Norwegian fisherman sweater is what I'm saying, or you go the other way and you pay $800 frickin' dollars for jeans so that everyone sees that, well, you are wearing $800 jeans at the French Laundry. By the time I had a boss who got a reservation there, it was 2 years for the waiting list. By the time it came up, I didn't live in the state.
Yeah, unless you know somebody, unless you're connected, yeah, unless you're loaded, so unless you're one of the most powerful lobbyists in California and the governor.
Yeah, and I had a friend who canceled on one, so I was a seat filler. And look, it's spectacular, but Shannon was right. Morgan rocks a crop top, and secondly, they were acting like it was the corner bar.
Right.
They They're over the awe. Maybe the first time they went there, they were like, oh, good Lord, I'm in awe here. This is a Michelin star. They acted like it was the corner bar. And it's there's not just a pandemic on, but the naked display of wealth and privilege is, yes. If you don't know that about Gavin, it's
100%.
Like he dated a 19-year-old in San Francisco or something.
What? Oh, I know a lot of 19-year-olds he dated.
Yeah. Remember when he used to buy beer at Giants games? He would come down the steps with two beers at a stadium where you can only buy one at a time, and then he would hand one to his date, who was registered in Napa County as a 19-year-old voter. Oops.
Yep.
Anyway.
Nice. Brian, thank you.
Anytime I can take a dig at Gavin while talking about Iran, that's a good day for Brian.
Suits. Follow him at Dark Secret Place on Twitter for all the great information.
Up next, the vaccine news keeps getting better. We'll fill you in right here on Gary and Shannon.
Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Not a huge surprise. Even the guy who got fired wasn't surprised. The president fired the nation's top election security official. He happened to be a member of the administration who was refuting the president's claims of electoral fraud. He was vouching for the integrity of the vote. And it was pretty abrupt, but everybody knew that Christopher Krebs' days were numbered when he came out and said that this was the most secure election in history. He was formerly the director of Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Hours before he was fired, Krebs actually tweeted out a report that cited 59 election security experts saying there is no credible evidence specifically of computer fraud when it comes to the 2020 election outcome. He's gone.
Well, he called it. So Mark Remillard joins us now with the good vaccine news that we received this morning. It looks like it's not just Moderna that is got their foot on the gas here, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Pfizer said anything you can do, I can do better, I guess. Moderna was 94.5% effective. Now we're hearing that the Pfizer vaccine, after their beyond the preliminary data, which came out last week that said that vaccine was 90% effective. Now they're saying with the finality of data from the phase 3 trial, the vaccine is 95% effective. And also good news here was that there's been no serious health problems reported. The most common was some fatigue, which is often common with vaccines, and that was only in about 3.7% of people. So and the other good news is that the effectiveness of this vaccine appeared to be consistent across age, race, ethnicity, 94% effective in adults over 65 too. So very positive sign there. And essentially now this is it seems that the company will submit its request to the FDA for emergency approval within days. And that has the federal government now and President Trump's Operation Warp Speed, which is that effort to develop a vaccine or assist in developing a vaccine, that has them talking today about the distribution. Now they've been focusing on this for a while, but they came out to provide an update today, and they said that within 24 hours of approval, they expect to begin shipping these vaccines, be it the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, once they get approved.
The FDA is going to have a panel, an outside panel, kind of talking to it or the powers that be at the FDA. Who makes up this advisory panel?
Yeah, so that panel, the independent panel, is made up of a lot of different people, including health scientists, medical professionals. It's a wide-ranging panel, and this is the same kind of a process that vaccines go through, where you have this independent panel look at this data. They look at the safety data. They look at the effectiveness of the vaccine, and they make a recommendation to the FDA, which will then make an ultimate determination here. This is, again, for an emergency use authorization. This is not necessarily the full process of what they call a biologics license, essentially. That's a full vaccine approval. But either way, this is the data even that we're seeing right now, that the vaccine is 95% effective. That comes from an independent board. That's not Pfizer saying that. So that's very positive signs. And then, as I said, FDA would give it the emergency use authorization, presumably in December, it seems likely. And then from there, some distribution may begin. The federal government has been stockpiling doses so that they can begin shipping those immediately.
Moderna and Pfizer are the ones that have come out and said that their final numbers are great. We know that Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, at least six other companies are working on coronavirus vaccines. Let me ask you, in the long-term schedules that we've seen, which would be, you know, outside of first responders and the highest risk groups, this wouldn't be widely available for the general population until April-ish. Does that change if we get a notification from AstraZeneca that their vaccine is good, that Johnson & Johnson, their vaccine is good, that will we see those longer term schedules shrink because each of those companies would be able to put millions more doses out on the market?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if that would condense the timeline, though it seems like that could be possible because the government, the federal government, as part of Warp Speed and as part of the various acts that the Congress has appropriated for these purposes, they invested in the actual development of five vaccines and then procured agreements with six companies to procure doses, millions of doses. So that's where that stockpile comes from. And I think when I believe it's Pfizer was the only company in that group that didn't actually receive money from the federal government to help develop their vaccine. But the federal government has reached an agreement, I believe, for 40 million doses of that vaccine, 20 million immediately. So that's where the federal government says that they expect by the end of December to have 40 million doses potentially on the market of the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine if those are approved. Then you talk about potentially tens of millions of more from the Oxford AstraZeneca, the Johnson & Johnson vaccines, and then even further ones down the pipeline. It would seem to stand that if we're already stockpiling those, once those are approved and now in the mix, that could speed up the timeline. I think the only two that appear to be on the cusp of that are the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, because those are still in the phase three trial at the moment, expected to get data on those in the new year. Whereas it seems that there's, you know, more in the pipeline, but further down the pipeline that, you know, I'm not sure exactly when we're expected to get clinical data from them, but those two, the Johnson & Johnson and Oxford vaccine, seem like we might get them in the new year, and then perhaps those could be added to the mix and help speed all this up.
Let's hope we get some more good news on Monday. Monday seemed to be good for coronavirus vaccine news.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark Remillard, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dolly Parton. Speaking of COVID vaccine, the Dolly Parton $1 million donation story is pretty good. We're going to untangle this thing. Why it is that she even thought of giving $1 million to Vanderbilt University.
It starts when Dolly was a young, poor girl living in the mountains.
Yes, it does.
And it'll end with the salvation of the world.
And we have Dolly Parton to thank for it.
Mm-hmm.
Gary and Shannon will continue in just a moment.
'Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. Making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah. Cause I don't care.
The subject line on this email is Shannon's so inspiring.
Aww.
Gary and Shannon, KFIM 640 Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio.
Are they
radio
talking about me or somebody else?
Justin Worsham's coming up at the bottom of the hour. I believe she's talking about you. We have a chalkboard in our kitchen. My husband uses it for grocery lists and jotting down websites from infomercials. I use it most often for inspiring and or funny quotes. The one I threw up there a couple of weeks ago was meant to get the husband in gear to change his attitude about getting older without yet another actual lecture from me, the love of his life. It says, you can't give your life more time, so give the time you have left more life.
Ooh, I like that.
And big, just extravagant life. The other day, I think it was Monday, I heard Shannon say something in a similar vein, words of such concise wisdom. I immediately added them to the board, and they made my sad, mad, harangued husband laugh out loud. Those words were, book the trip, eat the donut.
It's true. You got to live your life.
Yeah, but you don't live by that eat the donut thing. I don't recall you eating a donut.
If I want a donut, I'm going to eat a donut. I had a donut last Sunday watching football with Chris and Carlo.
Tracy says, thanks so much to both of you for all the years of the laughs and invaluable life lessons. Like, book the trip, eat the donut.
Life's too short, man. You don't want to be on your deathbed going, I should have gone to Paris.
That donut.
I should have had the pizza.
I should have had that French donut. Dolly Parton, we told you yesterday, is an angel among us. She donated $1 million to Vanderbilt University in their coronavirus research back in April. But she didn't write, love Dolly Parton. She wrote, in honor of Naji Abumrad.
Naji Abumrad is a physician and professor of surgery. How did the two become friends? Well, it goes back to Dolly's first ever car accident. It wasn't that long ago. It was in October of 2013. It was minor, but it left her bruised and sore enough to where she wanted to go get medical advice at Vanderbilt Medical Center. That's where she met Naji.
So Naji and Dolly start having just normal conversations. She liked to talk about current events. She liked to talk about science. They talked about their history. And it turns out their childhoods were not all that different, even though they were 6,000 miles apart.
They found out they were both poor mountain kids that just struggled to get by, even though they were, like you said, raised more than 6,000 miles apart. Naji said Dolly became someone he could confide in.
Yeah, he told the Washington Post that when they discussed their childhoods, they agreed their homes were almost identical growing up. So Naji looks out for her after she has this car accident. They have these conversations about current events and science. And she went to him and asked about the coronavirus research that Vanderbilt University was doing at the beginning of this year.
She wanted to learn as much she could about what was being done to study the virus. And he told her about the exciting developments made on early vaccine research by a team there at Vandy. Shortly after, we go into lockdown, and Dolly says, you know what? I want to help this situation out.
Now, on Monday, when Moderna came out and said, basically, here's a big thank you list of the people who helped us make this, helped make this possible, their announcement that their vaccine was going to be 94.5% effective. One of the listings for the funding sources was, quote, the Dolly Parton COVID-19 Research Fund, which immediately people go, do you mean that Dolly Parton? Or there can't be more than one Dolly Parton. And who's got enough money? What other Dolly Parton's got enough money to start something called a COVID-19 research fund? Now, someone already did rewrite the song Jolene and change the word to vaccine.
Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Begging of you, please go in my heart.
Naji's son is about 47 years old now. He happens to be the host of the nationally syndicated Radio Lab, if you haven't heard that. And he said when he first heard that his father was talking about a friend that he met that was in a car accident, and her name was Dolly, he didn't put it together. And even when his dad's phone rang and the name come up that said Dolly Parton on it, Jad still was skeptical of his father's claim of having Dolly Parton as a friend. And he said, it's not that I thought that he was lying. It just is an odd thing. He's not the type of guy who hangs out with the Dolly Partons of the world. And he said, if he really is friends with Dolly Parton, maybe he could get me an interview with her. And he did just that. And it turned into a 9-part series called Dolly Parton's America, exploring her impact on music and the world. The singer's ability to bridge society's deepest divides.
So it really isn't Dolly we should be thanking. It's whoever hit Dolly with their car back in 2013.
How do you go that long in life
without being in a car accident?
And never in a car accident?
I would just assume that she's, I don't know. Even if she is driven around all the time, you'd think that at some point
Fender bender, bumper, bumper, chumper, whatever they call those things. I don't know. I never did traffic. So. Bumper jumper.
What does that mean?
Someone bumper taps jump. Your...
Oh.
Yeah.
Fender bender.
Fender bender. Thank you.
A bump. What did you say? A bump?
Bumper jumper.
Are you entering dementia? Let's just be totally transparent with this.
I have lockdown mind. That's what I have.
Oh, that's a thing.
Back.
That's
it's
a
coming
real...
back. It's coming back. And
bumper jumper. I got into a bumper jumper the other day. I was at a stoplight and all of a sudden, tap. And I was like, that's a bumper jumper. I like it. It's got a nice ring to it.
Justin Worsham when we come back to the Gary and Shannon show.
You are.
Listen, they're going to use it this afternoon.
I know.
You watch.
I know.
You're going to listen. It's like 6:30 tonight.
I know.
You'll be tooling around looking for an essential business that's still open. And Angel Martinez is going to be like, oh, there's a bumper jumper on the 210.
Oh, my God. I can't wait till I hear it. Gary and Shannon, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. New York's mayor says he's shuttering schools to try to stop the renewed spread of the coronavirus. An about-face for one of the first big U.S. school systems to bring students back to classrooms this fall. School buildings will close tomorrow. Nearly the entire Raiders starting defense is going on the COVID-19 list due to high-risk close contact.
These guys...
That's unfortunate because the Raiders are on a freaking tear.
These guys only know that they've come in close contact. Well, they're not going to know that they were in close contact with somebody until that guy tests positive, right?
What I'm reading from that is a guy on the defense tested positive.
Right.
They know they're in close contact with him, so they all go on the list until they can show that they're negative.
Yeah. Well, like you said, all of the teams now are instituting
the intense
higher levels
of protocols. Yes.
Because they're going to try to get through the rest of the season.
NFL placing all teams in intensive protocol starting Saturday to mitigate the risk as the number of cases rise around the country. Use of masks mandatory at all times at team facilities, including during practice and in weight rooms. Meetings must be held virtually or in the largest indoor space with approval by the league. Meals have to be available for grab and go to avoid players and staff congregating in cafeterias. Time spent in locker rooms has to be limited.
I was reading through, I'm distracted by the menu for French Laundry today.
Oh, yeah. It must just be a sample menu because they don't put out their menus, their current menus.
This is just their chef's tasting menu for
yes.
today.
Well, that's the only way you can eat there is the tasting menu. It's not like you can order a la carte.
So they just give me everything?
Yes. You eat all of that. Or if you're the first partner, you probably had two bites and paid $500.
Well, they do have a Wolf Ranch white quail presse, the sunny side up quail egg. That's probably what she had. And then was like, I am so...
Yeah. There's no way that those people, looking how thin they were, made their way through an 8-course tasting menu.
Mi corazón es full, she said.
Mm.
That's what she said. Can I do good COVID news first real quick, though, before
yes.
you get into the whole thing? But the good news is that regulators have approved the first rapid coronavirus test to be done at home. It's a single-use test kit. It's from a company called Lucira Health. Allows you to swab yourself in whichever orifice would give you a nasal sample. I'm assuming that would be your nose. And then swirl that in a vial of lab solution that plugs into a portable device and then... You either get a positive light or a negative light.
Mm.
You will need a prescription, but that is on its way. The other good news is, as we've seen hospitalization numbers go up around Southern California, we are getting another tool that could hopefully put an end to that or at least reduce the surge. A new antibody treatment called bamlanivimab. You heard me?
We've talked about that before.
Bamlanivimab. San Bernardino County's health department is going to get 484 units of it. Riverside will get 247, Orange County 236, and L.A. County just over 1,000 doses of the Eli Lilly therapeutic that have been allocated to hospitals thanks to the federal government funding the distribution of it.
Before we talk about dad stuff, I wanted to talk about a mom stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman in Waterloo, Illinois. Have you ever been? I heard it's beautiful this time of year. Waterloo, Illinois is where a 62-year-old woman is giving birth. One of the oldest women in the country to give birth. Her name is Kathy.
Her name is Grandma Kathy.
Kathy Blattner. She's expecting a baby girl in April. Wait for it.
Oh, wait a minute.
Thanks to eggs donated by her daughter.
Oh, so she will be a grandma.
Yes, because her daughter is also expecting.
What?
Yes. So you've got 62-year-old mom, Kathy.
Pregnant.
Her daughter.
With the daughter's eggs.
Sarah is pregnant, too, with her own eggs.
Uh-huh.
They're both going to give birth.
To the daughter's kids. Or is Grandma Kathy doing it the old-fashioned way?
Kathy and her husband, John, met and got married when they were both in their 40s. And she was unable to have children at the time because her eggs were no longer viable. She received donor eggs from a cousin that were combined with her husband's sperm. She got pregnant, had a son 12 years ago, and then they decided they wanted more kids. So Kathy, in her late 50s at the time, said none of the infertility specialists she contacted would treat her.
Yeah, because you're...
She finally found Dr. Sherman Silber, who thought she was in great physical health, and she had a family support system and the financial and emotional means to care for more children. He said older women on average tend to have more confident, more intelligent babies, and that's because they're focused on the baby in the early years of life when everything happens. So this time around, Kathy used donated eggs from her daughter from her first marriage. Silber then combined them with sperm from her husband, John. And so I guess mom's husband had sex with the daughter.
No.
In the Petri dish.
That's not.
Well, in whatever capacity. So Kathy became pregnant at age 60, has a 2-year-old son.
And is doing it again?
And now they've got the remaining embryos.
Okay.
So they're doing it again. That sounds exhausting.
Justin Worsham hosts the Dad Podcast. Justin, would you... There it is. Would you encourage a 62-year-old Mrs. Worsham to go through with another pregnancy?
No, I would not. Okay, I don't think I would have encouraged the current Mrs. Worsham to go through with a pregnancy.
And keep your damn hands off of her, all right? That woman's tired.
Yes, sir.
Woman's tired?
By the way, one of my now top favorite moments of Shannon trying to break down how that happens, and Gary just going, no. No.
She was going to say that he had sex with his own daughter's egg.
That wasn't his daughter biologically.
Well, whatever.
It was from the first marriage.
Ugh. Listen, we talk about this, and I love this topic over and over again because I feel sometimes I do fall into this category of authoritative parenting. But I do it with love. But that authoritative parenting can actually raise confident, independent kids.
Yes. What I love about this is that it breaks down. I've never seen it. I see a lot of these articles. I love to read them. But what I love about what this does is it breaks down parenting into four categories. Control, how much parents try to influence their child's behavior. Clarity, how clearly parents communicate to their child and how willing they are to hear their opinions. Maturity demands, how much pressure or encouragement parents give their child to be mature. And then nurturing, how warm and how giving. And I've never heard him say, like, helicopter parenting, like if you're a permissive parent, right? You're too nurturing and too clear. Like, you want to hear your kid's opinion and it dominates you. But if you're authoritarian instead of authoritarian, you're too much on maturity demands and control. Like, it leans to which one way or the other. Whereas what they're saying is authoritative is kind of an even keel, which is what we talked about a lot. The kind of more middle of the road you can be, the better. And it makes more confident, more successful, more independent children.
I have seen that written out, the differences between authoritative versus authoritarian, and that sometimes it can be a fine line, depending on what the motivation is. You can be authoritative as long as you're doing it with care. Authoritarian is just rules because I say they're rules.
Right. And it is. And to be honest, I think this entire time I thought I was more of authoritative, or I'm messing it up already, authoritarian parent, because I feel like I'm a general. Like, I rule with an iron fist. But there's conversations. Like, there's dialogue. I'm very loving also towards my kids at the same time. And the only thing that, and this is interesting to me too, is that a lot of the experts I've talked to is that for whatever reason, the permissive parenting leads to, it's so counterintuitive. The kinder you are to your children and the more giving you are to them, for some reason, they become more likely to be anxious, have issues with substance abuse, be depressed, struggle in, with life, like, which seems so wildly counterintuitive. But if you kind of have a little bit of an iron fist that isn't like teetering over the edge of abusive, right, then they're more likely to be okay. But it's best, again, middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You don't like this, Gary?
Well, no. I think you're right. I think they are right, and we're repeating. Mm. All right. Hang on, Justin. Hang on. Can you hang on?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I can hang on.
Why? What were you doing? What was so important that you couldn't answer our call?
It's so bad, guys. This is so embarrassing what I'm about to say out loud.
You forgot?
I'm sitting here in my studio at home. I did not forget. I was so excited to do this. I'm sitting here. I'm listening to the show. I'm enjoying it. I'm listening to commercial breaks. And a house just closed here in Burbank, and I thought people were calling me, and because it wasn't the number, I didn't save the hotline number, and I just kept sending poor Jacob to voicemail going, I got to be like Gary and Shannon. I can't talk to you people. I got to be like Gary and Shannon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Babu.
Like I said, keep your hands off that woman. She's tired.
It was a colossal head up the butt moment, guys. Sorry.
Hey, hang on one second. We'll let you rinse off. Justin Worsham, host of the Dad Podcast, has joined us. We'll continue here in a second. Show yourself. Shannon, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Justin Worsham, host of the Dad Podcast, has finally answered our phone calls. And
I deserve that.
Sorry. And we've talked many times also about the issues of parental controls when it comes to electronics. And parents are divided across generational lines on when it comes to how they view the responsibility of keeping their kids safe online. 57% of baby boomer parents believe that most of the responsibility lies with parents. Only about 30% of millennial parents feel that same way. That a lot of times, the younger the parents are, the more they expect their kids to be responsible for their online safety.
Yes, and the content providers and the people issuing that access to that content as well. I'm curious if I'm just kind of Rorschaching this where I see what I want to see into it. But it just seems like the older generation is like, listen, parents, you got to take care of your kids. Don't pass the buck. And the younger people are like, well, listen, the people who are providing the content need to have some accountability here. And it's like this societal evolution that we're seeing in regards to screen time or access to online content. Because what they're saying is the school needs to be aware that there could be kids that are seeing this, and that content creators also need to be aware and provide barriers for kids to have access to this. How say you guys? Where do you think it falls?
I just feel like it's got to be I don't want to say the parents always know best, but the parents, I would say, have a better idea of the dangers and the pitfalls that would be out there.
Yeah.
And what I think is interesting, and they go on to it, the millennials are the ones that, like, when they dig a little deeper, the baby boomers are afraid of online predators. Right? Gen X, which is the middle generation, is just worried about the content. But the millennial parents are more worried about the interactions and the ramifications that have that. So what I take from that is that baby boomers worry that somebody's going to, you know, be like prey on their kid or try to take them or abuse them in some way. Whereas a millennial's like a different kind of abuse, like just be unkind. And I'm not trying to say that millennials are so hypersensitive.
No, but they grew up with it. They grew up with the technology.
Right.
They know what it's like to be online bullied or deal with those kinds of things and the interactions and how they can create problems. Baby boomers don't even know. I mean, they don't. This is all new to them.
Yeah, and I think I fall into that kind of millennial category because when I read this, I was like, predators? I'm like, is that even still a thing? Like, I thought they got all those guys when they got that guy in a ghillie suit on that show on ABC. What was the guy? Chris Watson? Why am I blanking on his name?
Oh,
you want some lemonade?
The yes. molester.
Why are we blanking on the name?
To catch a predator, yeah.
To catch a predator. But what was the guy's name? Who was it? Hi, Chris Hansen.
Chris Hansen, yes. That's the one. Well, listen, I still think that as, you know, your kids are getting to that age now where they're going to have, do they have phones yet? Say it again. You dropped out.
One of them does.
Okay, so you're getting to the point
now where the younger one does. Jack has one.
You're going to have to start.
He's the only one with girlfriend. That's why he needs it. Yeah, the older one, he's a late bloomer.
I get it.
He's in fourth grade now. He's playing the ladies. He's got to text the girls.
Hold on a second. You're going to keep a phone away from the kid until he gets a girlfriend.
Yeah.
I love it.
These are the rules.
Girlfriend or a job, you choose. What were you going to say, Gary? I'm sorry.
No, I think that's perfectly. I was just going to say that you're getting into that age bracket now, not you, but your kids are, where you're going to have to, there will be some things where you're looking over their shoulder and you're like, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, the one time my sons had laptops, and I think I shared this on this segment, there was one time I was putting away laundry in his room. And he was watching a 9/11 video about how, and then he leans over to me and I was like, oh, what you watching? He goes, did you know that the U.S. government was the one that brought down the World Trade Center?
Boy.
And I was like, oh boy, time out. And then I went and told my wife, I go, when I walk into my adolescent son's room, I'm supposed to catch him watching adult films, not conspiracy theories. Like, that's not the conversation we're supposed to be having. But the one thing I did have to monitor, it's interesting, I'm involved in like YouTube and stuff like that, but now there's Discord. And there's this whole other level that makes me feel like an old man that I have to learn that the older one's involved in. But my favorite online interaction moment was the moment I had to explain to my sons that when they're playing online games with their friends and they run away to go to the bathroom, they have to mute the microphone because nobody needs to hear them tinkle over the internet.
This is true. It's a good rule.
Justin, as always, thank you. We appreciate it.
So sorry, guys. It was the worst.
That's all right.
I hung up on him four times.
Next week,
four times I hung up on Jacob.
We'll be better next week, okay?
Oh, what did you do to him?
I don't know.
You heard his feelings.
I just hung up on him.
Oh. Excellent. Good idea,
John
Jacob. See what he did there?
Yes, I see.
John and Kencho's coming up.
Hang up on him three more times.
Stay dry, everybody.
Blessings.
That's it. That is it.
Gary and Shannon.